TIFF 22 has been incredible. Lots of great pieces of work. And we're here to talk about another one that I'm personally excited about, the world's excited about, Dear Mama, a five-part series about the legendary Tupac and Afeni Shakur. Here to talk with us, Alan, Jamal, welcome to iHeartRadio. Thank you so much for joining us. Wow, we've been waiting for this one. A lot of people, you know, there's so much mystery around Tupac and Afeni, a hip-hop legend and also a civil rights legend, black political activist. And tell us about the beginnings of getting this project together. Like, where did the idea to actually do this start?
I was approached by the family, the estate, when they were doing a feature version of this with another filmmaker, and Jamal was involved in that as a producer as well. And I don't know what the circumstances was, but that fizzled out as a feature, and I was asked to take a meeting with them. And I thought it was odd because I have an interesting, colorful, and glorious past with Tupac myself. But when I took the meeting and I said, hey, what about the idea of doing it on him and his mother? And the estate was really into that. Then I decided to do it. And I had already... Have we met yet?
We hadn't met. Oh, it's interesting because we made a film together that we never met on. I wrote a script called Knights of the South Bronx that Alan directed. And Alan will tell the story about how it was about kids from the South Bronx, black and Latino kids becoming chess champions.
That's
true,
good.
True story.
Shot it here in Toronto.
Here in Toronto.
Yeah, okay.
But we never met. They deliberately kind of didn't want us to talk, even though it was our story.
Okay.
So we hadn't met. We knew each other, had worked together, but we met and got to work together on Dear Mama.
So perfect pairing there.
Couldn't be better.
Right? Yes, it was a great script too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great script, yeah.
So I mean, you know, Tupac.
But may I say this?
Sure.
All of what we see about Tupac that's happening was Afeni's vision about keeping her son's legacy alive.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So she had talked for years about a book about Tupac, about an exhibit about Tupac, about her documentaries about Tupac, because she wanted to preserve his legacy. So yes. With Afeni, it was not about the money, it was not about being Tupac's mom, as much as about preserving his legacy, because she understood what that story of a young black man would mean to young black men, young black families, to black America, to America and the world. Mm-hmm. So that's where the initial vision for all of this stuff happened with Afeni while she was still alive years and years ago.
You know, it's so interesting because Afeni Shakur also has become one of these almost mythical figures in the story of Tupac. Like, where is she for real? You know, you hear all these rumors about, oh, Tupac and his mom are somewhere hiding out and all this stuff. And I love that we now have some facts and some background on mm-hmm. the real story about these real people mm-hmm. who largely misunderstood too. You know what I mean? Tupac is one of those, in being myself, a person who grew up on the East Coast right when a lot of the things were really going on, we even didn't understand the depth of the character and what was going on in mm-hmm. Tupac. So can you tell me some about the, during the research, mm-hmm. what were some of the things, like source material that you all used? Mm-hmm. Not just people that you talked to, but what kind of things did you find?
Well, when working with the family and the estate granting us ultimately access to everything.
Wow.
Whether it was the writings, the poetry, his thoughts too, because he had a lot of plans.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was community plans, whether it was ideas for restaurants. And he was, at the time, also shooting a documentary, No One Knows This, so I had to pick those pieces up
right.
about his life and his mother's life. And that I didn't know that when I came into this.
Right.
Access to all the a cappella recordings, unreleased recordings.
This is great stuff, man. I mean, this is incredible stuff. This is a very important documentary or series to the hip-hop community. And what's crazy to me is that a lot of the things that Tupac wanted to do are things that are being done now. You know what I mean? Like, how many hip-hop guys have restaurants and businesses and stuff, things that not quite were possible around that time, but he was already thinking about doing those things.
He was. I mean, when you visited Tupac in prison,
yes,
the visits wouldn't be about how, you know, terrible things were in here and, you know, what was going on. He would sit and talk about his vision, what he wanted to do, and it always included economics, family, community. It always included that. You know, it was amazing him talking about, I'm going to do the something called the Power Mecca Cafe.
Right.
And that's going to be where people can do, where they can perform, where they can eat, where they can interact. You know, so that kind of vision for what these things needed to do, not just one thing, but many things. And this is how his mind worked all of the time. One of the things that comes out in the documentary is that wherever Tupac was, he would write things down. So there would be notebooks. You'll see songs or the set list for how he wanted his album sequence written on the Clinton prison envelope, on the side of the envelope. And then you'll see something about a book that he wanted to do or something movement related when he wanted to help political prisoners written on a piece of Four Seasons stationery where he stayed. His mind was working like that all the time and on many different levels.
So are these physical pieces being archived now as a result of you guys?
Yeah, some of them, a lot of them are in the exhibition, the museum that's moving, I think, to New York pretty soon.
Okay, the hip hop museum, the one there?
No, the Tupac, what's the name? What's it? Wake Me When I'm Free.
Wake Me, okay. The Wake Me When I Free exhibit. That
I also had the hip hop new museum in New York.
Yeah, that might be big too.
Yeah, but the Wake Me When I Free is it has that. But Alan has a lot of that in the film.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing that in a way that the docuseries moves back and forth in time.
Right.
So you can see the connectiveness. You see Tupac talking about certain things in a high school interview that he would go on to manifest just a few years later, and you go like, oh, this didn't just happen. Mm-hmm. These seeds were there all the time. The documentary does an amazing job of pulling you into those various timelines in Afeni's life and in Tupac's life.
And she, I've noticed too, Jamal, like when looking at some of Tupac's writings and works and plans, when they were alive together too, she would note, she notes,
focused.
She has notes on his visions.
That's right.
You know, and post his passing. So I've, the whole team of filmmakers and editors, we've gotten to look at, you've got to pick up the pieces and try to figure out. My job was, personally, I wanted to understand Tupac. And I know the world, there's been a grand misunderstanding with him, you know. It's been a lot of chaos and just trying to find the melody and the narrative and what was the meaning to all this. So they left not just breadcrumbs, it's actual, as Jamal said, it's very well written out what the thoughts and plans and emotions and feelings were behind anything.
Almost like little waypoints in.
Afeni was great at preserving that stuff, and you have to understand the climate of what it was to be in the Black Panther Party and then to be underground if you were on the run. If you were in prison, we weren't really saving stuff.
Sure.
It's not like, you know, you took your Panther photographs with you underground. It was like, that's not me. You know what I mean? I'm Richard Pryor. I'm not Jamal Joseph.
Afeni
understood the importance of that and kept everything, kept all of those notebooks, those scraps of paper, because she understood, I think, before any of us understood, but we understood pretty quickly that there was something really special about Tupac and that he was here to make a difference for his generation and for generations to come.
Man, it's almost heartbreaking to hear you say that, because for such a special pairing, mother and son, and for them both to be gone, now we need them more than ever. But it's great that we have this to show. If you're looking to be this type of person, this is the type of work it takes. You understand what I'm saying? Like, this is the type of focus. I can't think of anybody right now quite as focused as Tupac. And that's one of the things I learned, was he was a man of tremendous focus. You know what I mean?
And meaning.
Yeah.
You know, you look at, we say this every generation, all this music ain't what it used to be or whatever, but just, when you look at modern artists right now, you're like, what do they stand for?
Sure.
I don't know what they stand for. What's the meaning of this? Everyone's just about the thing, which is the entertainment, but not lending their voice to a cause or a movement or even, you know, like insights into things. So
sure.
That's kind of vanished from music, you know?
And talk about the music discovery while doing this too. I mean, just getting the soundscape right.
Oh, man. That's,
I mean, that must have been an incredible...
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the things I discovered, we can take a track like Keep Your Head Up.
Right.
We've all heard it dozens and dozens of times.
Right.
But it wasn't too recently I've shown some people, like, I think it's, I don't know if Jamal's seen this part yet, but he's seen most of it. I'm like, how much is it? But like a song like Keep Your Head Up, like when you set it to score.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have a wonderful composer, a two-time Academy Award winner at winner Atticus Ross is really moving music. You set Tupac's even iconic songs to score, the lyrics come out,
yes,
and you can hear them in ways, and people who aren't hip hop fans can. And that's not why I did it. I did it because it's a way to interpret the poetry and process the poetry in ways that you couldn't with a beat.
Sure.
Even though there's a lot of, so it's like moving, finding ways to move his music around and be respectful too, because I hate when you watch things, you go, I want the song.
Right.
So you got to give him the song, but you also have to like decant it in an elegant, classy way where many people can receive the words and the wisdom, you know?
Well, you know, what's interesting about Tupac is the way he delivered lyrics was much like a lead instrument in an orchestra. Like, he really didn't just rap like straight ahead. A lot of ups and downs and then and like, he took you on a ride emotionally through the way he said things.
Oh, no doubt.
You know what I'm saying? So like, it would be very appropriate to put him to score, you know, with the lyrics.
Absolutely.
Right?
And that was part of his upbringing. Fanny would take Tupac and Setua, his sister, every place. So they would go to jazz concerts. They would go to classical concerts. They would go to plays. They would, you know, even when there was no money, if Fanny found a way to excite their palate,
yes,
culturally. But she would go to food festivals where they could try different cuisines, you know, inexpensively, to excite their palate, to know that there were things to experience and taste in the world beyond Harlem,
sure,
or beyond the Bronx. So he got to see folks like Sonia Sanchez and Amiri Baraka, who would perform with jazz musicians and use their voice like an instrument. He understood what scatting was.
Exactly.
He understood timing and, you know, and musicality and phrasing in that way.
And cadence,
right?
And all that.
And,
right?
And cadence. And, you know, he talks about, you know, in his house, you know, that there would be Don McLean and there would be jazz albums and there would be folk music. And he listened to all of that and understood this was part of that same rich cultural palette that we've been talking about.
Well, the media has a way of portraying rappers and activists with a broad stroke. You know, you're a gangster rapper, you're a communist Black Panther or whatever, but what this documentary does is pulls back the curtain and so it says there's more layers to these characters,
right,
and more truth to who these people are. So I greatly appreciate that.
Oh, thank you.
So Dear Mama, at TIFF, how about that? The Toronto International Film Festival. Gentlemen, congratulations and thank you. Genuine thank you for doing this.
Thank you.